That's right. Welcome in. It is the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and I am Chase McCabe, and he is Ryan Porth. Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Inc. Game Nashville Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, good morning, my friend. How are you?
What's up, Chaser? How are we doing this morning?
You know, I'm feeling good. It's a Wednesday. One thing I've noticed about the quarantine life is you kind of lose track of time, and so the weeks tend to fly by. Like, I feel like I woke up and it was Monday, ready to start the week, and now we're halfway there. So it seems to be cruising, and I like that. I'm good. That means I'm staying busy.
It's hump day.
It's hump day. That is correct. Guess what day it is. So we have a lot on tap for this hour. We're going to get into some Jadeveon Clowney stuff. Trevor Maddich was on with Jared in the GM yesterday and had some comments on him. So we will dive into that. But to kick things off, our bracket is voting is underway for the Sweet 16. But first, something that we do every year, because not to bring everyone down, but today should be the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it stings. It does. I thought I could get through it.
There's an empty feeling without playoff hockey. There really is.
I thought I could just say it and be okay and move on, but then it just, as soon as I said it, I was like, man, this is real. Mm-hmm. But something that we've done the past couple of years, we do a 24 hours of Preds, and the 24 hours of Preds usually is tied into the Preds Foundation and raising money for that. So we have an initiative, even though there aren't games to be played, we have an initiative with the Preds Foundation. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yes. Everyone, please go to NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong and consider helping our neighbors here in Nashville that are still affected by the tornado last month. As you all well know, many are still in need because the relief efforts really slowed down once the COVID-19 took shape and took control of our lives. So if you're able to donate and you would like to donate, again, that website is NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong. All donations support the Community Foundation's Middle Tennessee Emergency Response Fund. This is something that we always enjoy doing, 24 hours of Preds leading into their first game of the postseason. Unfortunately, with everything going on right now, there is no Stanley Cup playoffs, but you can still contribute. You can still help our neighbors. You can still help the city of Nashville, rebound quicker from the tornado. And it's going to take a lot longer than maybe we had envisioned back on March 3rd to rebound because of, you know, everything shutting down, but you can still help monetarily. And if you can, the website is NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong.
So do that because, look, those people still need our help. And, you know, I can't fathom what they were going through before this all started with COVID-19. But now that it has, you know, it has, as you said, it just slowed everything down. People aren't able to get out and help. You know, I did a remote where we were taking donations, and a lady went into Walmart, came out with a shopping cart, and we were like, oh, cool, thank you for the toilet paper and stuff. And she goes, no, this is all for tornado relief. I mean, she had a shopping cart full. Those were the kinds of things that were happening for tornado relief. So definitely do that, and we will continue the tradition even though there aren't games to be played. So we'll be bringing that up throughout the day of how you can help with the Preds Foundation. Like I said, Ryan, the bracket voting is underway, and we're going to take a deep dive into this, but some of the matchups for the Sweet 16, you know, really intrigue me, especially Shea Weber taking on CJ2K. I like that one, and I'm curious to see where the fans are going to go with that.
Yeah, to me, that is probably the most intriguing fan vote today of Shea Weber, former Preds captain, really the first true homegrown star in Nashville Predators history, going up against Chris Johnson, who had a three-year run in a Titans uniform that was really unlike any other from a running back, including the 2,000-yard season. And then you look at his last couple years, went downhill a little bit after he got that big contract. Then he moved on to greener pastures after playing with the Titans. But, yeah, I mean, Shea Weber, Chris Johnson, we're talking about two high-level star players in this city. And the early returns are Chris Johnson getting 65% of the vote here about 5 minutes in. I would not be surprised if CJ2K won this battle with Shea Weber. I am a little surprised, though. I think I said this on our Game On Demand YouTube video breaking down the Nashville Sports Bracket with you, Willie, and Darren. I am a little surprised at how well-liked CJ2K still is, despite the way his Titans tenure ended and how he kind of fell off a cliff in terms of performance and also had the holdout for a new contract.
I'm not, because when the organization brings a player back and they embrace them, even after all of that, the fans forget about it. And that's exactly what the Titans have done. The Titans have done a tremendous job with that. I mean, he announced his retirement as a Titan. They did the one-day deal. He retired as a Titan. You know, he was honored. I think he was the 12th Titan. He's been back for different things that they've done. He's been around a lot. And so they've done a good job of that. And therefore the fans go, oh, okay, you know, they're cool with him, so I'm cool with him. And they just remember the good times, you know. So I'm not that surprised. Some of the other matchups, Steve McNair taking on his teammate Javon Kearse. Early on, no contest, 92% to 8%. Roman Yossi, Keith Bullock, that's an interesting one. Roman Yossi has a slight lead over Bullock right now, but I think that could be a tight one as the day goes on. David Price is going to join Darren Donick and Chase at 1:30 today. He's losing to Frank Wycheck. A four seed, 61-39. And then, as you mentioned, Shea Weber, Chris Johnson with a pretty good lead right now. Voting just opened about 6 minutes ago. So you can vote until 9 o'clock tonight. And check that out. We've had a lot of fun with that. And excited to talk to David Price today, because with baseball in the news as being potentially the first sport to come back, I look forward to getting his insights on that.
Yeah, and I heard you with Darren and Willie yesterday talking about the possibility of, I guess you could say, the Biodome option in Arizona that Jeff Passan reported on Monday night, and you're 60% on that happening. I was surprised that you went that high in terms of a percentage.
And the way Darren asked the question, it wasn't necessarily in May. I don't believe that it's going to happen that fast, but I do think there is some scenario where they pull this off, because – I mean, I know there's a lot that goes into it, but let's say it's June and June is more realistic. I could see it. I could definitely see it, because I think we're going to know a little bit more by then. I think that the curve could be not flattened, but a little more under control. And so they're going to feel more comfortable about trying to pull something like this off. Now, where I think we all thought, we all kind of had the thought of, all right, we'll flatten the curve, and then we're going to get back out and everything's going to be normal again. Sports will come back. We'll be able to go and everything will be good. I don't think that's going to be the case, because there's that, well, it could come back. And so now I think you get it under control. You go more this plan of send the NHL to North Dakota, send the NBA to Vegas, send baseball to Arizona, and just have it contained that way. I think that has a better shot. So maybe I went a little too high, but I'm sticking with it. I do believe that it's going to come back in some capacity under that format.
Yeah, we'll see. Everything just changes from day to day and week to week. The conversation, like we said yesterday, the conversation we're having a month from now on sports in general is probably going to be a lot different than we are now, or potentially could be, either in a good or bad way.
Yep, for sure. Some other news that came out yesterday. You and I, when we did our show, The Cheap Seats, many years ago, we would always have conversations like this one about uniforms, and you know, that was before the Titans went through their uniform change, and you know, so that happens every year. And the Bucks and the Falcons have now both released their new uniforms, and they're okay. I don't hate them, but they don't blow me away. The Bucks have basically gone back to what they wore when they won the Super Bowl with John Gruden. I mean, that's pretty much what they have worn. They have this brown or pewter, whatever you want to call it, alternate that I don't really know if I care for. But the home and away, I mean, they're nothing exciting. And then the Falcons, I love, you know, a matted helmet, and that seems to be the new trend. So they've done that with the matte black for their helmet. But they have the black jersey, the red jersey, and then, of course, the Road Whites. I don't know if I love the ATL above the number on the front. I'll probably get used to that. But, again, it doesn't really do all that much for me.
I'll start with Tampa Bay. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniforms are a lot better in this setting than they have been here in the last, what, 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah, those were trash.
I mean, the digital clock numbers that they had, awful. Just awful. And, you know, just the color schemes of those uniforms, it was just brutal. But I will never accept a Buccaneers uniform that's not a creamsicle.
Well, that leads me into to kind of my next thing that I was going to say on this. I agree, because I saw some I guess they were, you know, a fan had made them, but they looked legit. And it was the current logo. It was the flag and everything, but it was, the color scheme was the creamsicle.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked awesome. I mean, they looked legit. It was a white helmet, and I was here for that. But I read a report last week that the NFL – they're having conversations. You know, they have this helmet rule. I don't know if people are familiar with this, but they have this rule that basically says they can only wear, the players can only wear one helmet a year. And because of that, they can't do, like, the Titans have a blue helmet, they have to have a blue helmet. They can't do throwbacks for Oilers or old Titans and have a white helmet. It's not like college where they have, you know, 16 helmets per school. So they have gotten together and they are considering changing that rule that would allow teams to at least have two helmet styles if they want. So think about the possibilities there. If you're the Patriots, you could bring Pat the Patriot back and you could do the throwbacks. If you're the Bucks, you could do the creamsicle because you could have the white and the pewter helmet. If you're the Titans, you could do the Oilers throwback. In an age where people love uniforms and we're having a conversation on sports radio about uniforms, I think it's a no-brainer for them to do that because it opens up the possibility. And guess what fans are going to do? They're going to spend money because they're going to buy these jerseys. Like, oh, the Titans are going to wear Oilers throwbacks against the Texans? Let's go. You know, I think that you would sell. I mean, I have an Oilers hat that I got recently because we love nostalgia. We love throwbacks. But, I mean, I think the Titans' current uniform combination would look cool with the white helmet. And so I think you could do different things with that, and to your point bringing up the creamsicle, I think they could do that if they change that silly helmet rule that I've never really understood.
Yeah, well, when you look at the Falcons uniforms, and you can go to at 1025 the game on Twitter to check them out if you have not seen the Falcons unis, they've got this gradient red jersey that kind of fades into black, kind of a la the Jaguars helmet.
Yeah,
back before they thankfully made their change a couple years ago. It's like the Falcons are trying to channel their inner Arizona Diamondbacks. Remember the Diamondbacks jerseys that had like the snakeskin gradient from white to gray around the shoulders?
Like, I think they just changed those.
I think they did. I think just for this season, they changed those. Like, here's the thing. If you constantly change your uniforms, you don't really have an identity, right?
Right.
So the Falcons made this change, the last change probably 16, 17 years ago. It was during the Mike Vick era. So I think it was like 03, 04. Now they're making this change. When I mentioned the Diamondbacks, they make changes every 2 or 3 years to their uniforms. I'm okay with these Falcons uniforms. I don't know. A lot of people are commenting thinking or saying that they look like XFL uniforms. I don't know if I would go that far. I don't mind the ATL as much as you do, but I mean, they're just nothing special to me, if I had to say.
And I think that you can say that overall about the Nike era in the NFL. I mean, everybody thought Nike was going to come in and make a lot of drastic changes, which in some ways they have. I mean, Seattle, I think, is a prime example. The Bucks unis that they just got rid of. But see, that's the thing. Most of the drastic changes that they made are now being, you know, they're getting rid of because people are going, what the hell were those? I mean, Cleveland's about to do another change because theirs were awful. So I think with uniforms, you know, I do think the 5-year window is probably too long just because we're in a state where people have a short attention span. So if you allowed a team to tweak maybe every, you know, 3 years, but, and then maybe do a full on change every 5 years, I think I'd be okay with that. Like, making the Rams play with the uniform combination that they've had the last few years because they didn't want to wear, you know, the dark blue gold numbers, and so they wore white, and they had blue pants with white stripes but no gold, but still had gold on the white jersey. Give me a break. Let them change.
I think if teams change every 5 years, that's way too often.
Do you? Well,
yeah.
Okay. If a team like L.A., for the Rams, for instance, if they move, let them change immediately. I mean, if they want to change their identity, if they move cities, then I think that's okay. 5 years, I don't know. I think that's fine. I think that's
for
enough.
For teams to change their uniforms every 5 years?
Sure.
I don't know about that.
The NHL changes all the time.
Well, and that's
baseball
mostly
changes
based
all the time.
Well, that's mostly the NHL one is mostly based on who the designer of the maker of the jerseys is. I mean, it went from I think CCM back in the day, and then it turned into Reebok, and now it's Adidas. You know, now Nike is taking over the baseball jerseys. I think some of the tweaks happen, or most of the tweaks happen within those changes, whether it's Reebok, Adidas, or Nike. But just changing your look every 5 years just to do it. Like, I just, you know, I think there's a reason why when people go through their favorite jerseys or have opinions on the best jerseys of all time, that the classic ones are usually the ones that get brought up the most because, you know, you don't change something that works. You don't change something that looks good and clean. If you're just constantly changing, like the Padres and the Diamondbacks, they change jerseys more than we change underwear. I mean, it happens all the freaking time. Like, just stick with a uniform and roll with it. So I'm not a huge fan of teams changing every few years, but I guess to each their own. And to your point about the creamsicle make on Twitter, I think a lot of Photoshop experts on Twitter do a lot better job of creating jerseys than either teams or designers themselves.
I would agree with that. He's Ryan Porth. I am Chase McCabe. When we come back, Trevor Maddich of ESPN joined Jared and the GM yesterday, and he had a strong opinion on Jadeveon Clowney and the Tennessee Titans. You'll hear what he has to say, and Ryan and I will discuss. It is The Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. Enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in. It is The Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth. Every day from 9 until 10, Marquise Munson is our producer. So yesterday, Ryan, we've had a lot of discussions about the Tennessee Titans in the offseason. We knew that this was going to be a fun offseason for this team. You had a ton of free agents on the team that John Robinson had to take care of. You had some big contracts with the quarterback, the running back. Derrick Henry has signed the franchise tag, but there was one free agent that is still available that many have linked to this team because he played for Mike Vrabel in Houston, so there's familiarity there, and that is Jadeveon Clowney. Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, but also has a lot of insight on the NFL. He joins Jared and the GM every week. He was on yesterday, and he had some thoughts on the Titans and Jadeveon Clowney.
I wouldn't take Jadeveon Clowney at all. I just wouldn't have him at all. Unless it were a minimal contract on a prove it 1 year or 2 year deal. Just wouldn't do it. You know, he's got an injury history, but in my opinion, he's also got a history of deciding when he's going to play. I mean, his motor has never impressed me. It didn't impress me at South Carolina. It didn't impress me in Houston. It didn't impress me in Seattle. I'm not calling him lazy. I'm just saying that it never stood out to me that his motor made me think this guy loves the game. I mean, you look at a J.J. Watt or a T.J. Watt, his brother. These guys never stop. They love to run. It's like a dog that loves chasing balls, man. You can throw that ball and that dog will run until he drops of exhaustion. And that's the kind of guy you need at that position because a lot of sacks come from effort at that position. A lot of important tackles come because the ball's going the other way on a run and you come from the backside and you chase him down when somebody else makes him juke a little bit on the far side of the field.
That is Trevor Maddich on Jadeveon Clowney. Strong comments there And I think there's some interesting things. Ryan, I'll let you go first and give your thoughts, but I hear him when he says, you know, about the contract and then the motor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely trust Trevor Maddich's eye when it comes to evaluating football talent. He's one of many great evaluators of just looking at players and being able to break down film, break down talent level. And I trust Trevor Maddich's opinion there on Jadeveon Clowney. And it is consistent with how I have felt in this last month when a lot of Titans fans have been clamoring for Jadeveon Clowney. The price tag was at $20 million to start free agency, and Titans fans were all in on getting Clowney at that number, and they're still all in to get Clowney just shy of $20 million. I think Diana Rossini was the one who came out recently and said that Clowney's price tag has dropped from 20 to the 17 to 18 range. I would not pay more than $15 million a year for Jadeveon Clowney. He has, out of the 6 years in the NFL, he only has one full season. So to Trevor Maddich's point, he has an injury history. Clowney has never reached double-digit sacks in a single season. People talk about this guy like he's a future Hall of Famer. I think he's a Hall of Fame talent, but he's not a Hall of Fame player. He's never reached double-digit sacks in his career, and he was the number one overall pick to Houston back in 2014. He's averaged less than 6.5 sacks per season in the last 5 years. I do not want to pay north of $15 million for a player like that. I'm even hesitant going north of maybe $12 or $13 million for Jadeveon Clowney. I understand he has a great skill set. Again, I think he's a Hall of Fame talent in terms of the talent that he possesses, but he is not a Hall of Fame player. And I also understand it's more than just sacks for edge rushers, that we can't just look at the three sacks that he got in a Seahawks uniform last year. But when you weigh the production versus the risk that you take in giving Jadeveon Clowney $15 million or more per year, to me, it's not worth it. I would much rather draft an edge rusher at 29 than pay Clowney long term.
Mm-hmm. Well, here, I will say this about Jadeveon Clowney. I agree on the price. $20 million, even $18 million, way too much. The price has to be right for me to consider this. Now, what stood out to me was John Robinson, when he had his conference call last week, he was asked if the Titans had any conversations with Jadeveon Clowney or his representation, and he said yes. He confirmed it. And I jumped out of my chair, not because I was excited about it, just because John Robinson doesn't show his hand, and he did. And so that made me think, okay, there's something to this. If he is acknowledging that the organization has talked to him, they're interested. And, you know, Mike Vrabel said it too, and maybe not to the, you know, in depth as John Robinson, but I thought that was very telling that he admitted that they had had conversations. And then you saw reports that it looked like it could be the Seahawks or the Titans. Now there's a report that the Seahawks are unlikely to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. So what does that mean? I think I've seen Cleveland is now in play. So I think that there's definitely interest there. The price has to be right. I kind of agree with you that if it's 15, I'd probably do it. And the big reason why is the head coach. I just think Mike Vrabel, especially at that position, knows how to get the best. And yeah, there could be concerns on the motor. Well, they signed Vic Beasley, and there are a lot of concerns with that with him. They took a chance on him anyway because of Mike Vrabel, and that's what John Robinson said.
Well, Vic Beasley is a lot less of a risk at 1 year, $9
million. Like, I agree.
I'm a lot more willing to roll the dice on a talent like Vic Beasley for that term, 1 year, $9 million, than I would be Jadeveon Clowney for, you know, a multi-year deal that's worth north of $15 million a year.
But he's also 27 years old. I mean, he's in his prime.
Right, but he has had injury history even dating back to South Carolina. I mean, this guy can't stay on the field. When he's been on the field, you can make a highlight reel of Jadeveon Clowney that makes him look like a Hall of Famer. But he's not a Hall of Fame player. He's not even, like, close to being a Hall of Fame player.
He doesn't have to be. He just has to be a productive player.
Right, but again, three sacks last year. He's averaged less than 6.5 sacks per season when you look at his last 5 years. I mean, I am not willing to give Clowney a 3 or 4 year deal where you're going to have him against the cap at more than $15 million a year when you can go out and probably draft a guy who is going to give you a similar amount of production at much less cost.
Okay, and that's a fair point. But do you think at this time the biggest position of need via the draft for the Titans is still pass rush, or do you think it's corner?
That's been the biggest position of need for the last 2 or 3 years. And that's what, you know, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth because the last couple of years I've been saying you got to go get a pass rusher. And it cost them against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game because Patrick Mahomes had all day to throw. And Mahomes lit up the Titans on that day. And that was a big reason why the Chiefs ended up going to the Super Bowl and winning it as opposed to the Tennessee Titans getting a chance to play the 49ers in the Super Bowl. But when you look at a draft need, look, Floyd Reese says it all the time, you go with the best player available. If I had my druthers, I would pick a pass rusher at 29. You can find a corner probably in the second or third round that can do a lot of the things over time that maybe Logan Ryan could do. But if I'd rather sign Logan Ryan and draft a pass rusher at 29 than sign Clowney and draft a corner in the first round.
Okay, I'm going to hit on that just a second. But the thing that has stood out to me with all of this, and I could be reading way too much into it, but I do believe there is a Vrabel factor. I mean, his 9.5 sacks in 2017, Vrabel was the DC with Houston. Now, I'm not saying that Mike Vrabel magically did that. I think that there is something to that just because Mike Vrabel played that position. He understands it better than just about anyone. And he's on the field. I mean, he's on the field coaching with these guys. And the Titans don't consider a player like Clowney, with everything that you have brought up, the motor, the injuries, if they don't feel, and they don't do it with Beasley either, if they don't feel like they could get the best out of him. John Robinson clearly thinks that Mike Vrabel can get the best out of Jadeveon Clowney, and I feel that way too. So, well, I'm not going to pay $20 million. If it's 3 or 4 years and you're paying $15 million, yeah, that's a risk, but you made that risk by re-signing Tannehill. You're going to make that risk when you re-sign Derrick Henry to a long-term deal. That's the name of the game. I feel like he can come in and make this team better, so I do it.
We all expect Derrick Henry to get signed to a multi-year deal before training camp opens, right?
Absolutely.
If you do that and you sign Clowney, you're handcuffing yourself for the next couple of years in terms of adding to this roster, and I don't know if I'm willing to do that either.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, you with Henry, it's the cap hit's not going to go up by that much because you already factor in now the $10.5 million that he signed the tag for. So you're going to add, you know, a few million to the cap hit. I see your point, but you do have the space to do something, and you're going to end up, if you don't bring in Clowney, you're probably going to re-sign Logan Ryan, which will cost you probably 10 to 12. So you're gonna be spending money anyway. You have about $8 million that you need to put, you know, towards your draft class. So I mean, I think it's all gonna shake out the same, maybe give or take a couple of million, no matter what you do. That's just my opinion on it. The thing with Logan Ryan and the thing with the cornerback position, I feel like cornerback, because they've lost some of the depth that we always talked about, they currently don't have Logan Ryan. That has become more of a position of need than I originally thought it was going to be. I thought they were going to have to address it, but I didn't think it was going to be as much as now they have to. And so I'm more inclined at 29 to go corner, or if, you know, they do miss on Clowney, then you definitely have to bring Logan Ryan back. I'm shocked that Logan Ryan's still on the market, to be honest with you. I thought he'd be signed already.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the market's just moving very slow.
Yeah,
with everything going on, so. It's just a weird NFL offseason, to be sure.
When we come back here on the rundown, you know, do we think that the pass rush is where it needs to be with this Titans team? And I'll take that a little bit further, too, with the roster overall. It is the rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Even though we currently don't have playoff hockey, you can still support the Nashville Predators Foundation and give back to our community. Head to NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong today to help our neighbors still in need following last month's tornado. All donations support the Community Foundation's Middle Tennessee Emergency Response Fund. Welcome back in. It is the rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, hanging out with you. Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, Ryan, before we get into my roster evaluation that this conversation has kind of morphed into, apparently I said something about John Robinson that you wanted to comment on.
Well, you brought up the fact that John Robinson was vocal about interest in Jadeveon Clowney. And this was, a week or two ago when John Robinson came out and admitted that he was, or at least has had talks with Jadeveon Clowney's camp, right?
Yep.
When have we ever heard that out of John Robinson?
He doesn't do it.
So the point I want to get to is kind of asking openly, do we think that that's legit interest in Clowney, or do we think J-Rob is trying to drive up the price for a team like the Browns or the Jets or the Seahawks to get Clowney? Because we never see big moves coming when it comes to the Titans with J-Rob. We didn't see DeMarco Murray coming. We didn't see the number one overall pick traded to the Rams coming. We didn't see DGB to the Eagles coming. Floyd did. We didn't see Ryan Tannehill coming. There have been a lot of moves, big moves, that J-Rob has made over the years since being Titans GM that we don't see coming. So that's what I think, caught the attention of a lot of Titans media members and Titans fans when J-Rob came out and said that about Clowney. Are we sold that they are truly in the mix, or is he kind of – playing a game of poker with other teams right now? I think that's something that we have to consider.
I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely think they're interested, but I think to your point, he brought it up because because now he's shown his hand, and so that is going to drive, that's going to change negotiations. Now it may work against him, and it may drive the price up too much to where he's not willing to pay it. But I think that you get other teams jumping in. Because of what he said, of like, oh, wow, the Titans are interested now. But here's the bottom line to it, because I remember standing next to Floyd when John Robinson was speaking at the Combine a few years ago. I think it was his second year as Titans GM. And Floyd starts laughing. And Jared and I look at him and go, what's so funny? And he goes, he's already mastered the art of being a general manager and standing in front of the media and talking and saying absolutely nothing, and just answering questions without answering questions, because and that goes back to your point that you don't really know what he's going to do. So, you could be right. I mean, that I haven't thought about it that way, but you could very well be right that he's just up there and he's bluffing and he's got a motive, but who knows? And that's what I like about John Robinson. I like that I can't figure him out. I think that's the sign of a really good GM.
Yeah, I think John Robinson has done a masterful job with this roster ever since he took over, considering where it was when he took it over from Rustin Webster.
We talked about pass rush, and pass rush continues to be a need, and I think we're always going to say it's a need until all of a sudden you see a stud that's racking up sacks and they're able to stop a quarterback the caliber of Patrick Mahomes. I agree? I think it's going to be that conversation.
Sure.
Okay. With that said, one thing that we praised the Titans and John Robinson for last year was, and Willie Donick said this best on our show, if you look at roster spots like 20 through 53, you felt really, really good because the depth was so strong. I don't feel like that depth is there right now. Now, this is before the draft. This is before undrafted free agents. There still could be some other free agent signings to kind of tweak things, but they lost a lot of depth players that were important to this team. So as you look at the roster as it's currently constructed, do you feel like that there's been improvement? Do you feel like there's still work to do, or is it incomplete? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I definitely think the picture that we're looking at with the Tennessee Titans is incomplete. We've been talking about the pass rush, and the pass rush is not complete when your collection of pass rushers is Harold Landry, Vic Beasley, Kamele Correa, and some improvements in Derek Roberson, DeAndre Walker, Reggie Gilbert. Like, that pass rush isn't going to scare teams. Would it scare teams more with Jadeveon Clowney? Sure. But there's a price there that I don't think John Robinson should exceed to go get someone like Clowney. I'd rather groom a pass rusher at 29 or even trade up a little bit to get a quality pass rusher than pay a premium price to get Jadeveon Clowney. When you look at corner, they are really lacking depth at that position. When you look at running back, they don't have a backup or even a third stringer that you can rely on at running back behind Derrick Henry. When you look at tight end, you know, they have some nice pieces, but without Delanie Walker, you're going to have Jonnu Smith step up. You're going to have Firkser step up. You're going to have Pruitt step up. At offensive line, Dennis Kelly right now is the week one starter. I don't feel all that confident in Dennis Kelly in being a 16 or 17 game starter for the Tennessee Titans. I think when we discuss draft needs, you mentioned corner. I mentioned pass rush. I think we would both agree that you have to find some sort of tackle in the first two or three rounds that you can have as a security blanket in the next couple of years to Dennis Kelly. So yeah. Your point about losing a lot of depth here this offseason is completely valid, and I do think there is a lot of free agency moves to be had yet that we may not learn of until after the draft because of everything going on. Teams might be trying to see what they can get in the draft before spending money in free agency.
Well, and I think too with the offensive line, I mean, you have to replace Dennis Kelly. I mean, Dennis Kelly was
a great point.
So critical in the success of the team. I mean, you go back to that trade and that's, I mean, he looks like a genius. John Robinson looks like a genius for trading DGB away, who's not even in the league anymore, and getting Dennis Kelly. Now they have David Quisenberry that played a handful of games last year when Taylor Lewan was suspended. He actually caught a touchdown pass too, so he's got that versatility similar to that of Dennis Kelly, so he could be an option. But to your point, if you draft a tackle or you draft a swing offensive lineman, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world to try and replace Dennis Kelly. Give Dennis Kelly a chance. I mean, give him the opportunity to be the right tackle, but maybe groom somebody behind him. Another position that you didn't bring up that not many people have focused on, and I don't think it has to be a priority, but I do have some concerns, and that's wide receiver. And you may sit there and go, okay, why? I mean, did you see the season that A.J. Brown had? Yeah, I did. He's got to do it again. You know, the sophomore year is all, you know, the sophomore slump is a real thing. So he's got to do it again. Teams are going to have tape on him now. There were some games where he matched up against big-time corners, and he was quiet. He didn't do much. So I want to see him take further steps. Adam Humphries has to stay healthy because you don't have Tajae Sharpe anymore. Tajae Sharpe is gone. The big factor for me is what are you going to get out of 84? What is Corey Davis going to be? And one thing that Trevor Maddich was asked yesterday is, in his evaluation, are there wide receivers in the draft that he would take over Corey Davis?
Now, this is nothing against Corey Davis, okay? This is
right.
Nothing against him. He's very good at what he does. He was very productive in college, and you know he's going to have a long career. But these are the guys that I would definitely take over him right now. Jerry Jeudy of Alabama, CeeDee Lamb of Oklahoma, Henry Ruggs of Alabama, that, you know, ran in the 4.2s. T. Higgins, I would take over him. Same kind of guy, but I like Higgins better. I would take Justin Jefferson over him. I would take Michael Pittman of USC over him. I would take Chase Claypool of Notre Dame because of speed over him. And that's about it.
What do you think about that? And a lot of those aren't going to be available at 29. Plus, I don't like the idea of spending a first-round pick on a receiver.
No, I don't either. I don't like the idea of spending a second-round pick on a receiver either. You know, I do think you could find a receiver in the third or fourth round that can contribute to that group. But, I mean, here's the thing. I think we both agree, too, that they could use another body at receiver outside of Brown, Davis, and Humphries. You know, the fact that they lost Tajae Sharpe to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Look, and they have Khalif Raymond. I mean, they do have Khalif
yes,
Raymond.
Yes, but I don't know if you can rely on Khalif Raymond to be your fourth receiver. I think he's more of a fifth receiver that chips in on special teams.
These are the receivers on the roster right now. Cam Batson, A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Rashard Davis, Cody Hollister, Adam Humphries, Khalif Raymond, Travion Thompson.
They need another receiver or two, but here's the thing. You don't have an abundance of picks in the first three or four rounds to address all of these needs and get high-quality players at these positions that we're talking about. So that's where I think there are still free agency moves that John Robinson can make. I would love to see them get Keyshawn Vaughn in the second or third round.
Me too.
But look, they need a right tackle. They need a corner. They need a pass rusher. So it comes down to which players do you roll the dice on in free agency? Do they go to a Chris Thompson or DeAndre Washington as their backup running back for a year or two behind Derrick Henry? Or do you draft somebody? Do you re-sign Logan Ryan or draft a corner? I think there are a lot of these type of debates going on for GM John Robinson and head coach Mike Vrabel. You're not going to be able to address every single need that you have in the draft and find someone who can instantly contribute within the first year or two with the picks they have. They don't have, you know, the Dolphins can do that because they have every pick under the sun. So the Dolphins have a lot of needs and they'll be able to address a lot of them in the first few rounds, but the Titans don't. So that's why I keep saying there will be free agency additions still as the summer goes along.
Yeah, and also with this receiver class, just to wrap this up, it's so deep that I think you're going to have some pretty good options available in the free agent pool, you know, once the draft is over. So I think that's something you have to consider. But it's a position that they need to address. But as you brought up, there are a lot of other positions that they need to address. Running back, the line, tight end. I mean, look, I would love it, what kind of story would it be if they ended up drafting Bryson Hopkins? And they brought him in.
Sure.
The same team that his dad played for.
That would be great.
A lot of options for the Titans in the draft. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you said it well.
Okay. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, it is the rundown. Hey, we're away from each other. No hand signals. It's hard to see my man, Ryan Porth. When we come back, we'll do an update on our bracket. Much more, it is the rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go to our Twitter page at 102.5 The Game to vote on our Nashville sports bracket, determining the best Nashville athlete of the last 30 years. Voting takes place through April 15th. Welcome back, Le Champion, Chase McCabe with Ryan Porth here with you on the rundown. And Ryan, speaking of the bracket, voting is underway for the Sweet 16. And we have some early returns with only four matchups today because you know, this thing is getting whittled down. But Steve McNair, 90% of the vote over his teammate Javon Kearse. What is going on? Where are the freak supporters?
Not surprised.
You thought it'd be that much of a landslide?
Yes. Steve McNair's a legend. I mean, look, Javon Kearse, a great player in a Titans uniform, very worthy of being a top five seed in this bracket. But, I mean, it's Mac 9, man. Like, he is the ultimate. He and Eddie George are the ultimate co-fan favorites in this franchise's history. So I am not surprised that Steve McNair holds that kind of a lead. I would expect him to hold that lead throughout the day.
You know, I have a subtopic based on that I'll get to in just a second. Let's run through these. Roman Josi leads Keith Bullock 61% to 39%. David Price, he's joining us at 1:30 today on Darren Donick and Chase, trails Frank Wycheck, but he's cut into that a little bit, 59% to 41%. And Shea Weber holding a lead over Chris Johnson, 54% to 46%. You and I opened the show discussing that we thought that would be the closest matchup of the day, and I still feel that way.
Yeah, I would think that one's going to go down to the wire between Shea Weber and Chris Johnson. Are you surprised that David Price is trailing Frank Wycheck?
A little bit, but
here's the thing though. We've seen in this contest, the legacy Titans are still very much fan favorites.
Yeah, and that leads me into my subtopic that I just brought up. The legacy Titans, and you're always going to remember those that were here. Like, you know, I grew up here. I remember that season. Those that were here are always going to have a special place in their heart for those guys because that was the beginning. That we had never had the NFL before. And so you're going to remember Steve McNair, Eddie George, Frank Wycheck, Derek Mason, Kevin Dyson, Bruce Matthews. you're going to remember those guys and have them in a special place. But with all that said, especially a player that is as special as Steve McNair, I think what kind of pressure does that put on, you know, the next guy? I think Marcus Mariota, everybody had hoped he was going to be a special player. Second overall pick, was going to be the franchise guy, but then they thought that about Jake Locker. They thought that about Vince Young. And I'm not saying that it's the pressure of being the next Steve McNair, that's why it didn't work. But I do think that factors in to especially the quarterback position of you're always going to be compared to the first guy, which to this point has been the best guy.
Sure. I think that's valid that, you know, any Titans quarterback that comes through is going to be walking in the shadow of Steve McNair until the next quarterback that takes the Titans to the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, Steve McNair still has done something that no other Titans quarterback has done, and that's take the Tennessee Titans to a Super Bowl. So until that happens, I do think that's going to be the case. But what franchise doesn't have that? You know, Dolphins quarterbacks have been living in the shadow of Dan Marino for the last 20 years, you know, and they've had probably 40 different starting quarterbacks in the last 20 years. You can go up and down, and it's really the lucky franchises that can go from one great to the next that have had a long period of success. You look at the Packers going from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. You look at the Indianapolis Colts going from Peyton to Luck. Though the ones who get lucky in that realm are those teams. A lot of other teams, like the Titans, you have these quarterbacks here and there that emerge and become a star within the market or league-wide, but you don't have – it is so hard to find that Hall of Fame-level quarterback and, you know, have multiples of them. So the fact that the Titans had Steve McNair, yes, that's great, but I don't view that as really any different than a lot of other teams in the National Football League, you know?
Yeah, but with the Titans, I think it's like Tannehill, for instance, he could take this team to the Super Bowl. But it's going to be different because I think there's you look at a quarterback or any position differently if they're homegrown. It's like you brought up Shea Weber earlier. He's the first homegrown hero who was drafted and developed by the organization. Steve McNair was drafted and developed by the Oilers Titans organization. Tannehill wasn't. Tannehill was a trade. And so I do think there's not as much pressure on him. There's pressure, but there's not as much because of that. I look at those differently. You know, Mariota was drafted here second overall and was supposed to be the guy. It's like, all right, third time's the charm. Okay, since McNair didn't work with Young, didn't work with Locker, it's going to work with Mariota, and it didn't. So now you go to a guy that you picked up off the street via trade, and I think there's just not as much pressure from that standpoint of being the franchise guy. Now he's just going out and playing football. That's how I look at it.
Sure.
I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I just think it's different. Even if Tannehill wins the Super Bowl, I think he's always going to, you know, you're going to have Steve McNair, you're going to have Ryan Tannehill, and they're going to be in two different categories. And that could be the case for if they draft a guy next year and he turns out to be the franchise guy, it could still be that. But that's just kind of what I think when it comes to especially that position. But I think there's pressure on all positions. I mean, Jonnu Smith is going to have to live in the shadow of Delanie Walker and Frank Wycheck. That's just kind of the way it is. So you can vote at 1025 The Game on Twitter. Now, you have been anchoring our coverage during Golic and Wingo. And they had and you've done a tremendous job.
Well, thank
by the
you,
way,
Chase.
They had a topic this morning that I wanted us to hit on real quick about what was it? It's an event that you missed, and I think everybody could think back in their sports fandom that they either got up and went to the bathroom or left an event early and they missed a moment.
Yeah, and this is all because ESPN during this quarantine time, they are playing game 6 and 7, I believe, tonight of the 2013 NBA Finals, where the Miami Heat miraculously came back and beat the Spurs in forced overtime. While it looked doom and gloom and that the Heat season was over, A lot of Heat fans left the arena in Miami. So that's where this topic kind of originated from. And they were taking calls across America this morning on this topic. And, you know, there was so the most recent example of this would have been, you know, I'm so wired into the MLB playoffs. Like, I'll watch every pitch as long as there's a lot of drama. And I went to the bathroom, and the Dodgers, I think, were up 2-0. I came back, and Rendon and Soto had hit back-to-back home runs off of Clayton Kershaw to make it 2-2. And I'm sitting there thinking, how in the world did I just miss that? Like, I've been watching this entire game. I go to the bathroom, and I come back, and I missed arguably the biggest moment of the playoffs at that point. So that would be my most recent example. Leaving games early, I just don't do that.
I don't do that.
So I don't have a memory of leaving a game early and missing something once I left.
Yeah, I stay till the end. I mean, that's how I do it. I mean, there have been – have I left games early? Yeah, but it's usually not my choosing. It's usually I'm with somebody.
Or the game is so in, like, right. So done. You know, honestly, there have been a couple Preds home games in the last couple of years where you knew it was over with a few minutes left in the last TV timeout. You're bailing out of there trying to beat traffic. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, I don't leave games early, and my dad has always been the same way too.
The biggest one for me, real quick, as we wrap this up, was the Daytona 500 in 2014, I believe it was. I was down there with Darren McFarlane and Liz Allison. Rain came. We had to get back to the airport, or we had to get back to Jacksonville because we were flying out early the next day. I wanted to stay for the race, but Darren was like, "Nah, we got to go. We need to get to the airport." And I missed Dale Jr. winning. So,
that was mine. Your boy Dale Jr.
That was mine. That's going to do it for the rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Brian Porth. We're back at it tomorrow at 9. Stick around, though. I'll be here. Darren Donican, Chase. That's next.